Good evening and welcome to Think Rant. Today is the 19th of April 2012 and I'm your host John Stabler. Joining me as usual, my two regular co-hosts, back from his self-imposed hiatus and some illness, Stephen Brett.
Good evening.
And also, that was really good.
Thanks.
And also joining us, the comedy legend, Trevor J. Williams.
Well done, Steve. That was a lot of effort. that was like the most patronizing thing I've ever.
Well, to
okay,
be fair,
maybe you brought no news stories, but well done for that radio.
How do you know I've brought no news stories?
That's what I mean. Is I actually think that's the maximum amount of effort I've seen off him for quite a few weeks now. Considering he hasn't been on the
for
podcast
a few weeks of it.
So there you go.
Oh, excuse me. Anyway,
it's
hello everybody.
To say, why do you say good evening? It's irrelevant.
We are recording this in the evening, so therefore, from now on, don't let it weird you out.
If you happen to be listening in the morning, don't be freaked out.
Okay. If you listen to this on your drive to work, look out! I'm so childish.
So it's glad to have you both back. The podcast has missed you.
It's a pleasure to be back.
And hopefully we're looking forward to Steve having lots of interesting stories. He's had all that time
as always, loads.
And also this week sees the return of our regular feature. Because it was and I must say, right.
Is this the week of the triple wang?
This is,
please, I dream of
you dream of three wangs.
I can't believe that Trev is begging for triple wang.
That's what I dream of.
There's no triple wang this week. But to be fair, this is the best. The best. Quite simply, excellent. The best spot the fake. And but I'm gonna save it for 10 minutes. Trevor,
hello.
Before your cough really starts to affect your voice, maybe you could start us off with a story.
Okay, yeah, there's a story that I'm busted to talk about, and I'm really dying to know what you guys think about this. Hillsborough charity refuses £1,000 donation from Alan Davis as backlash against comedian's rant continues. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I've heard about this.
I heard about it, but I didn't actually really see what was said.
Okay, are you going to furnish us with a summary of the story?
Here we go. It's from the Daily Mail about a week back. The Hillsborough Justice Campaign has refused a £1,000 donation by comedian Alan Davis following his comments about the Hillsborough disaster. Davis received a backlash from fans after he mocked Liverpool's insistence that they never play on the anniversary of the disaster. The HJC has not accepted the £1,000 paid into its PayPal account by Alan Davis, the charity said in a statement issued on Tuesday evening. Actually, a Tuesday ago, that would be. Whilst we accept his apology, we would prefer that he genuinely tried to understand why the decision never to play on the anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster is so important. The 46-year-old, talking on the Tuesday Club, was discussing Liverpool's insistence on playing City rivals Everton this coming Saturday, last Saturday, that would have been, in the FA Cup's semi-finals. The podcast presenter Ian Stone attempted to reason with Davis by saying, "It's because it's too sad a memory." However, the TV star responded, "Do they play on the date of the Heysel Stadium disaster? How many dates do they not play on? Do Man United play on the date of Munich? Do Rangers play on the date when all their fans died in that disaster, whatever year that was, 1971? Pundit Stan Collymore hit out at Davis on Twitter, writing, "I support the right of any club not to play on days of tragedy at their club. Any club. Don't mock others' right to commemorate tragedy. At United, Rangers, Juventus, Liverpool, Bradford and many more, I respect their right to commemorate their clubs by not playing on those dates. And on a podcast, as a celebrity, calling Spurs fans vermin is out of order. Banter, great. Vermin, no. Doesn't matter who chooses to play or not to play, that is their choice." So it's a good rule of thumb to remember that. Banter, great. Vermin, no. I think those are wise words.
Yeah.
Thank you,
catchy.
Stan.
Catchy, yeah. Nice one. What do you think of it?
Yeah.
Steve, do you have any thoughts?
Oh, no. You go first, please.
Okay. Well, I don't think there's anything complicated about it. I think that them using the phrase "refused" was a bit strong, because I think they clarified after that if he did want to give £1,000, they would take it, but they didn't want him to just think that he could pay his way out of it. They just said, "Well, no. We accept your apology. You don't have to give us £1,000, but I think they would have taken it if he'd insisted." So I don't think it's as bad as some of the news stories have made out. Well, you'd hope that eventually people can, you know, get over tragedies, because otherwise, surely, you know, we'd all have a day off every day, because there's always been a tragedy at one day in the past. But you know, I think Hillsborough is still obviously very raw for the Liverpudlians. So if they, out of, as a mark of respect, want to, you know, ask if the FA can rearrange a game, and the FA are able to accommodate this, I don't see what the problem is. I don't see why Alan Davis had to be so much of a dick about it, really.
I think it was because it was, it meant that Chelsea had two matches very close together with not enough recuperation time in between, which was going to screw their chances. Now, this is in the past, so they've had matches, and I don't know if it did affect them or not. I couldn't give a warm cup of monkey spunk either way what actually happened in a game of football. But he was just objecting to the idea that because it's grief and it's all of Liverpool saying, you mustn't, you've got to take it seriously. And I agree with taking it seriously, but I actually agree with Alan Davis on this one. I understand them saying something along the lines of, we'd rather not play on this date, and we'd make every effort to avoid it, but if it causes major problems, then we could do something like ask for a minute or two silence from everybody at the stadium as a way of commemoration. But a blanket refusal is kind of maudlin and indulgent. Now, some dreadful things have happened in Liverpool, but I think we should spare a thought for the people they actually happened to, rather than all the grief sponges who live there, who make appalling speeches about what has happened to all of Liverpool. Plus, he was providing comedic banter on a podcast. When Boris Johnson offended all of Liverpool, he was being a prick, because in politics, you're supposed to be a representative for your constituents and not act the tool to garner fame and influence. George Galloway, please take note.
So true.
Sorry, Chad, you can carry on. Sorry.
Well, no, sorry, as I said.
Yeah, it's basically.
I was just going to say, as I said, if the FA were able to accommodate, then I can understand. But I didn't realise that they just put out a blanket, we're not gonna do it, and, you know, like some spoiled child.
Seems like. But again, researching it properly would have meant caring about football.
Yeah, the date they couldn't play, was it the Saturday? Because they did play on the Saturday. Anyway, didn't they?
No, they wanted it to be rescheduled for the Saturday.
Oh, right, okay. To be honest with you, I'm in a bit of two minds about this, because on one respect, I think because the tragedy of the Hillsborough disaster is actually still so recent,
sure,
and there are people whose lives are still affected by it today who were there, or who had family who were there who died in the tragedy, I kind of think, yes, I can understand why the club want to postpone that and want to do that. And also because of all the politics which surrounds it, in the way, you know, the blame was put on the fans, the blame was put on the innocents, when in actual fact it was the establishment, it was the police force, who made some really pretty appalling errors of judgment, which led to the death of, was it 96 people, I believe it was. So I can totally understand why, and those wounds remain fresh because of the abject refusal to apologise for such a long time for that tragedy, when, you know, people were blamed unjustly. You know, you had the Sun making up all sorts of stories, hence the Sun isn't sold in Liverpool anymore, and all these sort of things. So I can understand why it's a very raw wound for people, because actually there are still people living it today because they haven't had justice and they haven't had an adequate response from the authorities over the tragedy. However, I also agree with you, Trev, in some respect. I do think there's a certain amount of, I think you call them grief sponges.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite amazing the number of people who weren't even alive or were very young at the time of the Hillsborough disaster, who didn't have anybody they know in that tragedy, who break down in tears. And, you know, it's almost like one of those processions you see in the Middle East where, you know, the people are breaking down in tears and gnashing and wailing. And I find that quite disturbing, that actually people have taken that approach to this public outpouring of grief over what was undoubtedly a terrible tragedy. And I think there is something to be said for what you said in that, Trev, in that I think it is a bit maudlin, and to some respect, people do need to move on from it, especially when they weren't even attached to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's 23 years ago, so anybody who's under the age of 30 who wasn't directly connected to it really has got no excuse for it. No, apart from the encouragement of other fans telling them that they've got to feel terrible on this particular
exactly.
day.
I mean, but by all means, like you said, have a remembrance. I mean, I absolutely fundamentally believe that. Yeah, remember the dead and, you know, remember the tragedy and ensure that it doesn't happen again, I think is the most important thing. And maybe by having a minute silence, 2 minute silence, whatever, wearing black armbands, whatever is an appropriate response to that. But I do find it very disturbing when you see these people, you know, with these public outpourings of grief when it was something which didn't affect them at all.
Yeah.
I find that really disturbing.
Mm. And you know, let's put this into context, you know, if the Daily Express can get over the death of Diana, you know, which it took them a while, yeah. but they've managed that now, it looks like. They only need to mention her once a year.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think they refuse to print, although that may be beneficial. But okay. That's my gag out of it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Commemoration is very important. That's why people have funerals. And you know, if kids are too young to appreciate exactly what that is, then you can have separate ceremonies for them, for lost relatives. If they were too young to appreciate a funeral, commemoration is a very important thing, but not for an entire city, and not when it's a football club deciding we're going to piss on the whole idea of football and everybody else has to accommodate us. Because as Alan Davis did point out, lots of clubs have had tragic, horrible things happen that they should commemorate as well. But, you know, if you want the game to be played, if you're actually a football fan, there are ways to do it. And they could have got all of the Chelsea fans, you know, half the stadium would be Chelsea fans, and they would all be doing 1 minute silence or showing respect. I think that would be lovely.
And yeah. I actually think in circumstances like that, where the Hildred tragedy was such a thing which cut across football, to be honest with you, then I think the majority of fans would respect that. Obviously, you're always going to get dickheads, and I make no apology for saying that, who are going to, you know, shout and make noises during a minute silence. But, you know, I genuinely believe that most football fans are moved by the events that happened at Hillsborough Stadium, and so I think they would observe a minute silence at a game. I mean, certainly, you know, Manchester United had the Munich disaster, and I know that they have actually played on the day of the meeting. You know, I think when the you know, it was a certain number of years, and I can't remember the exact date of the Munich tragedy, but they actually, you know, one of the major sort of dates, like 40 years or whatever afterwards, they actually played on that day. So you know, I don't think. I can understand the thought behind it, and I can understand people being upset by it, but I think you are also right in some respect, Trev, that people not so much need to move on, but need to find a different way of expressing their grief now.
Sure. Well, I can't see why anybody would have a problem with them saying, we're going to make every effort never to play on this match, but when we do have to, because, you know, it's so interconnected.
Yeah.
You know, every decision you have to change will affect maybe half a dozen other teams or more. I don't know. But yeah, just to say, look, we're still upset and we're going to throw a hissy fit about it. Well, if it's just because you're Liverpudlian, then for God's sake.
Yeah.
It's not a good enough reason.
Well, and the thing is, this is a great thing. It's not just Liverpudlians, yeah? It's the Liverpool fans up and down the country. That's the thing which, you know, kind of cracks me up. You've got people who are 200-300 miles removed from the situation, who didn't have anybody at all that they knew in this tragedy, who were then, you know, grieving so openly about it. I find it bizarre.
Sure. Well, a lot of people will choose a public event to grieve over because they have their own issues that need resolving. But to then attach to this other unrelated item and perpetuate your own problems through, like, the death of Diana or something like that, and then to celebrate her death day every year is just, that's freaky and that's causing yourself more damage, surely.
Exactly.
Staying with football, I have a a football story. Can you believe this, Trev?
Segway?
Yeah. This is news that a young lad published Norwich City's football kit on Twitter 12 hours before it was actually announced officially, and so the police were called. So I'll tell you now the facts surrounding this. He was on the Norwich City website browsing their content. And somebody, obviously one of the web developers, was updating the website at the time, uploading these images ready for the launch. And by simply following some links in the HTML, he found this image, which he thought, oh, brilliant. Look at this new kit. I'm going to share this with my friends on Twitter. So he published it on Twitter. And then the next thing you know, he knew the cops were knocking at the door. So to say,
did he actually get a visit from the police?
It doesn't say that in the story on BBC or the Daily Mail, but I think originally they did try and contact him, saying, you know, where did you get this information? They were obviously very abrupt with him, Norwich City, very heavy-handed.
Is this a joke at the expense of people who come from Norwich? Like, call the police! They have stolen a picture of our kit.
No.
I don't know what the actual accent is.
Well, the Norwich City said that they always defend their intellectual property.
They have so little of it.
So what, even when through their own balls up, it ends up in the public domain? Yeah?
Yeah. Apparently, the police and Norwich City consider looking at HTML code and finding links to pictures as hacking. So the police... said they were investigating misuse of computing, misuse of a computer system, which makes you think that he logged in to the website using some username password, hacked in, went and found them. No, he just followed the links that had been put there by the webmasters.
Yes. No, he was hanging over the pressure sensitive plates, and a drop of sweat was coming over. So yeah, he had to catch it.
It broke a laser beam.
That's right.
And he dropped the diamond out of his pocket. So, yeah.
I
wonder, it's interesting, because I wonder what the venerable Mr. Fry thinks of this, considering that he is on the board of Norwich City.
Oh, that's quite interesting. Mr. Fry hasn't commented.
I think he would be too embarrassed to comment, surely.
Yeah, you got that cooking witch. She's on there as well.
Delia?
Yeah.
How to boil an egg. How to maintain a website. Maybe that's what your next book should be, Dean.
Yeah, but yeah.
So talk about heavy-handed response, though, isn't it? I mean,
just a bit.
You know, at the end of the day, it's their balls up. If they're putting it on 12 hours before it goes into the public domain, 12 hours before it's actually released, then, you know, screw you guys. You've ballsed up. Take it on the chin. Don't do it again.
Yeah. And of course, the public have quite rightly come down on the side of the poor 17-year-old. City fan, because he is a fan as well.
Yeah.
And they've gone against Norwich and the police. And I don't blame them. So yeah. So that was a quickie.
Norwich City web developer fail. Gimme six.
And I thought it was going to be more bashing of Newport this evening, but
really, why? What have they done?
Oh, you missed some of the gags we were having at Newport's expense at Skeptics on Monday, but we're not going to talk about that.
I just want to be clear, a wonderful speaker who had spent time in the developing world, so I'm sure you can work out from there.
I just want to make it clear we are not talking about Newport Isle of Wight or any other Newport. We're actually talking about Newport South Wales, Gwent.
Yeah, the people that could actually be bothered to get in a car and come and beat us up, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. So they don't know where we live. They might pop some HTML code or something.
It's okay. Let's turn it into that long-running gag. Stephen Colbert did it once. It was something like, we weren't talking about Newport, the Isle of Wight, because some people complained.
Hang on a second.
We were talking about Newport, South Wales. What a shithole. That place is hateful. And then the next week you say, we weren't talking about Newport, South Wales. We're very sorry about that. We were actually talking about Newport. And then you mention another one. And then you just go around the whole world insulting as many Newports as you could possibly get. It was
good
wonderful.
For him.
Well, it's just such a dull name, isn't it? Well, what should we call this new port that we've built?
Hang on, lads. I've got an idea.
Well, I think there's a lot of places. I mean, just in Wales alone, think about it. Cow Bridge.
Bridge End.
Yeah.
Is it the same bridge? The cows have a long way to go.
It's one long bridge. Yeah. Okay, but we're boring our overseas listeners with Welsh
geography.
Welsh geography. Okay, who's got a story?
Well, it's not so much a story as one story as from a particular source. It's more of a source base, you know, many different places. But it's the story of Abugatada, obviously. You know, he was going to come up this week, wasn't he? Let's be honest. And
we did try and get him for the podcast, by the way, but unfortunately, he couldn't make it.
That's a shame.
He's a bit tied up at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, so I tried to get that other guy,
but Abu Hamza.
Yeah, but he won't pick up the phone.
Yeah. And every time you tried to write a letter, it's just shredding it. So yeah. Anyway, mocking people with disabilities is terrible. So yes, Abu Qatada and his deportation and the amazing balls up our favourite Home Secretary has made yet again. Trev, are you obviously up to date on the story?
I am. I think that the only thing the Home Secretary's got going for her is the first person out of three that we've mentioned that's got the right number of fingers. but I want to mention that my son, the comedy genius, mentioned, because he heard the name Abu Qatada being mentioned so often, he said, "Why is he named after Abba Banana?" And now every time we hear Abu Qatada,
Abba Banana,
we think it's the end of some Cockney song, which is appalling. I'm so sorry.
So that was all of your... That's your
thank
thoughts
you,
on the entire
thank
story.
Thank you for sharing that. I just think, you know, there's an issue here, isn't there? Where, again, we see the attempt from the government, from a high-ranking minister, to jump on the media populist bandwagon. And basically, fuck it up, for all intents and purposes. And has been very much left with egg on her face, and has probably scuppered, at the moment, the legitimate chance of deporting this guy, who frankly is a scumbag. However, there are other issues involved in it as well, and the rhetoric around the whole, European Court of Human Rights pissing on our territory again, blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
And the nonsense related to that, has been quite astonishing this week, to be honest with you. And in particular, what I find most interesting, I was listening to Radio 4 earlier on, and there was an interview on there with a Tory MP, some bird from South Nottinghamshire or something, I can't remember, Andrea or something, and, the stuff she was spouting and talking about how important it is to uphold human rights and to have human rights, except for Abu Qatada's, because he's a scumbag and doesn't deserve to have any human rights, and therefore, you know, why are we beholden to this court in Strasbourg to make this decision? You've just summed up the entire reason why right there. You know, you're making a populist decision without respect
for the law.
For the law, which basically says we cannot deport someone to face trial where the evidence would have been garnered from torture, which is quite clearly what has happened in this case. Now, the European Court of Human Rights has, you know, for all the criticism that's being levelled at it by the press, by the politicians, by anyone else who wants to jump on the media bandwagon, is merely upholding the ruling by our own appeals court, by the British Court of Appeal, which said we cannot send him to Jordan because the evidence has been gained from torture, and we do not deport to countries where such evidence is gained. So I just find it astonishing that these people are trying to, yet again, put all our woes at the door of Europe.
This is why I can't see it ending badly for the Tories. Either they get Abu Qatada out of this country, in which case everybody is fairly happy, because you can't see him actually... I mean, he's not innocent of this stuff. It's stuff that he's quite openly admitted to. But either that happens, or people in this country get so pissed off at damn Europe telling us what we have to do, and then they get an excuse to back out of human rights.
Well, and that's the thing, but that's the thing which I find most annoying about this, is that this isn't something which, okay, yes, the European Court of Human Rights has passed a judgment on this, or rather is making, you know, is it hearing his appeal, potentially, but actually, it's merely upheld the judgment from our own legal system.
Yeah.
It's our own legal system which has made this decision, not European, and it's being completely misrepresented by the British media and by politicians who want to deliberately mislead the electorate, which I think is shameful.
This is true. Well, you haven't said anything I don't agree with there. So, well, that's a lot shorter than I thought, because I thought we were going to get something out of that.
But yeah.
We're all going to be in agreement. Let's not send people to get tortured. I think that's a pretty good thing to agree on.
Yeah, I think so.
But again...
Yeah, sorry about that. It was well prepared and well researched. It's just that if you're expecting some kind of surprise from us, so, oh my God, Theresa May's a prick.
No, I was just hoping for some comedy, that was all. Because, I've given you the facts. I expect some comedy off it.
Sorry, but Theresa May, you know, all comedy just disappears, you know.
She's a mood hoover.
That's why they need to bring Spitting Image back, because I think that would be the perfect vehicle for Theresa May comedy.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So maybe we should start up some kind of petition or something.
Yeah, but potentially she's not going to be a job for much longer anyway, is she? Let's be honest. So.
We can but hope. So it's that time of the evening now. It's the bit you've all been looking forward to.
I can't wait.
So, okay, you ready to play the theme tune?
You've got a theme tune?
No. I'm joking. There is no theme tune.
Oh, I got very excited then.
That's the theme tune. So,
first rule of writing theme tunes is there is no theme tune.
So, hang on. Before we start, let me just top myself up. Right, okay.
Just one word too long in that sentence, mate. Oh, harsh.
Who's guessing first?
No, okay.
I'll edit you out, Trev. Okay.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I
thought it was quite. I couldn't just let that one lie.
Okay. Anyway, well, actually, I think Steve's going to have to go first because he's been on hiatus.
That's true.
So it's only fair.
Fair enough.
Okay, so here we go. Story number one. US news. A man from Washington State who claims to have had sex with 1,000 cars has defended his romantic feelings towards vehicles. Edward Smith, who lives with his current girlfriend, a white Volkswagen Beetle named Vanilla, insisted that he was not sick and had no desire to change his ways. I appreciate beauty, and I go a little bit beyond appreciating the beauty of a car, only to the point of what I feel is an expression of love, he said. Maybe I'm a little bit off the ball. But when I see movies like Herbie and Knight Rider, where cars become lovable, huggable characters, it's just wonderful. Mr. Smith, 57, first had sex with a car at the age of 15 and claims he's never been attracted to women or men, but his wandering eye has spread beyond cars to other vehicles. He says that the most intense sexual experience was making love to the helicopter from 1980s TV hit Airwolf.
Better not try and have sex with a Nissan Micra. If he wants that kind of thing, he should go to the Philippines.
Before Vanilla, he had a 5-year relationship with Victoria, a 1969 VW Beetle he bought from a family of Jehovah's Witnesses. But he confesses that many of the cars he's had sex with have belonged to strangers or car showrooms. Mr. Smith is now part of a global community of more than 500 car lovers brought together by internet forums.
Brilliant.
Story number two. Ghostbusters have been called to investigate a bum-pinching ghoul. A cheeky ghost is keeping the bar staff in an inner-city pub on their toes with his wandering hands. It's quite shocking and definitely not a muscle spasm, said manager Christian Dixon. It happens day and night. Paula Wharton, assistant manager of the Queen's Arm pub in Birmingham, has also felt the vice-like grip of the playful spook. But the 41-year-old says she won't have a bad word said against him. I don't think he's nasty, he's just another regular, she joked. Mr. Dixon is calling in a team of Ghostbusters to investigate not just the Phantom Butt Pincher, but a host of other sightings in the 117-year-old watering hole. Another ghost walks through walls and chairs, and chairs move on their own. So that's story number two.
Okay.
And the final, story number three, European news. Mart Griefhan, a 49-year-old man from Bruges, faces up to 4 years in prison for failing to report a death and improper disposal of a body. Griefhan's mother, Alicia, died in December 2009 at the age of 68 at their shared flat in the city. Rather than report the death to authorities, Griefhan instead cut up the corpse and fed it to his dog. The dog, who has now been rehomed and can't be identified for legal reasons, fell ill after eating the gruesome meals over the course of 3 months, and Griefhan was forced to seek treatment for his beloved pooch. It was local vets who alerted the police after finding fragments of bone and fingernails in stool samples they collected while investigating the dog's mysterious illness. Benoit Lutgen, the senior practitioner, said, "It was clear that the bones were not those usually found in normal cuts of meat. Our suspicions were confirmed when we found that what was obviously a human fingernail still attached to a partially digested fingertip." The coroner's report, based on Mrs. Griefhan's medical records, concluded that she had died of pneumonia after a three-year battle with colon cancer. Defense lawyers for her son tried persuading the court that Mark Griefhan is not mentally fit to stand trial, and the judge has adjourned the trial. And the judge has adjourned the trial pending psychological evaluation. So, there's your three stories. And I said it was good, didn't I?
Yeah,
I said it was good. So,
okay,
it's going to be difficult for you, Steve.
It is. So, what's the name of the pub in number two?
I shall tell you now. I did the Queen's Arms pub
in Birmingham.
Have you been to every pub in Birmingham?
No, I try to avoid Birmingham, to be honest with you. It is a silly place. So, butt pinching.
So, yeah, so.
Corpse eating.
And car
and
fucking.
Car shagging. Okay. See? This is. Yeah, it's a toughie. But I'm going to have to go with number two. Mainly
yeah.
because.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I have heard of people having sex with cars. So it's something which I can...
1,000, though? And,
well,
and not being funny, he managed to get off on Airwolf. How the hell did he manage that?
Well, lucky man, that's all I can say. You know,
that's
just...
one fine-looking helicopter.
Exactly. I just imagine Airwolf reclining, smoking, you know.
It was good for you, as it was for me.
Exactly, you know, a little bit of... love music coming out of the old onboard stereo, you know, it's a beautiful moment.
Bit of lingerie draped across it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, see,
are you two about to join this 500 strong internet forum?
I've kind of got an inkling that one's true, and I've kind of got an inkling that the third one is true as well because, well, Belgium is. Well, it's just dull, so, you know.
If you think that feeding your mother to the dog is
it's
just
half of the course. You've got to have something to, you know, brighten your life up, haven't you? So, not that I want to feed my mother to a dog, which that sounds like would just be horrible. No. Yeah, so I kind of think that's possibly true, because I think there are some weirdos in Belgium. Sorry to offend any Belgian listeners. So, I'm going to go with the ghost story not being true.
Okay. Over to you, Trev.
Right. Well, the car story, I know that one's true. I think I saw it on, was it Morgan Spurlock thing?
Oh,
did you
I
see that?
No, I didn't get that. No, I didn't get it from there.
All right. But I think that was on there. I've seen it somewhere. The only thing's different is, I don't remember him saying it was 1,000. I thought it was slightly less than that. But if it turns out that's the untrue one because you changed the number of vehicles that
no,
he's
I wouldn't
shagged,
do that. I'm
that would
I'm
be,
honest. I wouldn't just change one little fact like that.
Cool. The thing about the ghost bum pincher is a bit weird because they can't see the ghost. So how do they know how tall it is? For all they know, it could be some like lipless zombie child. Ghost thing that comes around biting and
or alternatively, it's just the landlord,
or it could just be a landlord who can run out of the room really quickly.
But if it's spectral, it could be some revolting, gangly goblin thing or leprechaun with burned skin all over it. You know, it could be revolting. They just think, oh, indeed. It's just some fella who goes behind the bar and pinches your bum.
it's a bit of a leap to call it a fella as well, you know. Why can't it be?
Yeah,
it
could be a lesbo.
Woman? Yeah.
And but
lesbo. I think the correct word is
that's Subo's brother.
Sorry, I said the word wrong. It's meant to be a lesbo because it's a ghost who's a lesbian.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
We apologize to all of our listeners in Belgium, Birmingham, anybody who happens to be lesbian, we just apologize.
But not to you in Newport. Oh, no, not to you in Newport.
That's a fucking hole.
The funny thing about that story is what I wanted to know, right, is that it's the barmaid said, oh, he's just a cheeky ghost. What if she turned around feeling someone pinch on the bum and it was like just a regular customer? Would she just go, oh, you cheeky customer? Or would she say, excuse me, I'm going to phone the police? But, you know, that's just me.
Well, the great thing you can do is if you go to that pub, you can just pinch anybody's ass. And if they turn around, just put on a wig made of long black hair and hang your head down like as if you're some weird Japanese film ghost. And everybody will think, oh, it's just that one. That's fine. So
you
go get
handful. Drink your pint with your hair down the front of your face, like
straw. You can. You stick it in underneath.
Oh, I see Steve's done this before.
I can't tell a lie. This is why I know it was fake. It was I.
So yeah, the one I'm having difficulty with is the third story. Actually, I think people are stupid enough to go for that ghost idea. But was it discovered because bones in dog puke? It was like
no, stool samples.
Oh, well. So while rifling through dog poo.
No, because he had to take the dog
Chilean
to the vet.
McKee to the veterinary world.
So, yeah, did I skip a paragraph? No, he had to take the dog to the vet because his dog got ill after eating a 3-month-year-old dead person rotting meat. And then while they were trying to find out what was wrong with the dog, they took stool samples and they found bone fragments and a fingernail.
No, it sounds a bit CSI for a vet. You know,
well, I don't think they ran it through their own mass spectrometer. I think they just phoned the police and said, "We found a human fingertip."
Sure, but I don't know. I just think that kind of thing would be really easy to miss, even when you're looking for a cause of a problem. They probably say, "Oh, it's just probably some meat." I mean, it sounds a bit suspicious. So I'm happy to be proven wrong in just a moment. I'm going for number three.
Okay. So we'll start from the top. You're right. There is a man who's been having sex. There's been loads of stories of people having sex with vehicles. But I think...
I want to say how. I mean, obviously...
Well, that's the thing. I read the story 3 times looking for how.
Obviously, the one of these doors by wherever, but it's a bit awkward to get to, isn't it?
And plus, you know, you want to make sure it's cool before you stick anything in
it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, how?
And
but the great thing is...
If you... No.
If you got stuck in the exhaust, right, and then you say, oh no, somebody come out of the house, I'm stuck, take me to the hospital. All right, I'll drive. No!
Well, that's some kind of
blowjob. Just happened to be washing my neighbour's car naked when I slipped and fell up the exhaust.
And the fall gave me a sense of priapic excitement.
There was a. There's actually a series on TV at the moment. I think it's on like Living or something like that. And it was a documentary. Oh, sorry, it was a 2-part documentary, and it was about doctors and obviously removing stuff from people's anuses.
They are the best anuses to have something
cool. Anuses, yes.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't know which word to use there. And they said, you know, the biggest, most often used excuse is I tripped and fell onto it. I mean, it's just how can you trip and fall so precisely? And on the way down, you lubed your ring up as well.
Yeah. And I just happened to have lipstick painted on my nipples or whatever weird sick thing that person does.
So there you go. So that is true. And you know, the fact that I thought. What turned me on to this story was the fact that it managed to get a Herbie, a Knight Rider, and an Airwolf reference in. How amazing was that? So that was a true story.
Well, Herbie will do anything after Irish coffees. We've all seen that.
And so the second one now, the bum-pinching poltergeist.
Come on, bum-pinching poltergeist.
Is a true story.
Oh, no!
There is actually a bum-pinching ghost. That, I'm not saying that's true, but there are people in the pub in Birmingham who believe that there's a ghost. And the funny thing is, it's it's almost become a bit of a, you know, a cliche that all these things always happen wherever there's drugs or alcohol involved. That's where you get your ghosts and your aliens, isn't it? So
it might well done, almost guys. Go so far as to lead you to suggest
that, what, that it's just a bunch of drunk people.
But that would be crazy. So well so, done for making up the so, human shit.
Yeah, I had to Indeed. Really work on that one. Now, well, my just because to
it was
show
all the names, fair play. They were well researched.
Names, yeah. Well, and the thing is, I went through all sorts of fake stories. I mean, some of the ones that I came up with, but then threw out. Okay,
and you might use them in the future, though.
No, because I gave up with them.
All right.
I was going to go for a guy was being fined because he hadn't registered his dog. Because he was claiming his dog was a trans species and it's actually a cat. That was one of them I was trying to work on. I'll save the other one. Have you got a Catholic story for us, Trev?
I have.
No?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Hey, that's better. That's just the way you did it. I was like, oh, no, shit, he's forgotten.
No. Right.
Does it fall in the category Catholic? I'm not sure.
It says, Vatican says traditionalists' response marks step forward in talks. Now, this is a particular group called the Society of St. Pius X, or SSPX. And they, or many members of them, have been excommunicated.
These are the guys which that Holocaust-denying bishop is a member of, aren't they?
Is that Bishop Bernard Stolen?
I don't know. I haven't just stolen your thunder. If I know British guy.
All right.
He's British. He's a British bishop, and he's part. I'm sure he's part of this this order, and he's a Holocaust denier.
Well, actually, if it's part of this reason this group, then that wouldn't be the reason why. See, I've got this great quote about the Catholic Church. Basically, what we have here is a failure to excommunicate. There are so many things you should excommunicate people for. And there's probably so many things, like Holocaust denial, that you should be excommunicated for. I mean, how can you belong to a church and say, that never happened? But what these guys were actually excommunicated for was they were ordained without papal permission.
Yep, that's it. This guy, Richard Nelson Williamson, bishop, looking at his Wikipedia page now, is a member of SSPX, and is basically, yes, he was made a bishop, and him and his chums were made bishops by another bishop who was officially a bishop, but they couldn't be bishops because they weren't officially recognised by the bishop himself being the Pope.
Yeah, they didn't have permission, they didn't have popey permission to do it, and so they were excommunicated. So that's what you have to do to get yourself excommunicated.
Yep. Just basically make yourself a bishop.
Yep.
And that's all you need to.
It turns out these people are having talks so that they can all come back into the church. Isn't that lovely? This is a group that's harder line than the regular Catholic Church. Than the Pope who tells everybody not to use contraception, even though like over 90% of Catholic women use contraception.
Are you telling me that whenever they're mentioning conversation,
sorry, in America, yes,
that Pope Benny goes, "Oh, not those fucking fundy nutters"? Are you telling me that's what he says?
Well,
I just find that hard to believe.
Possibly not Benny, because I don't know exactly when they were excommunicated.
Well, you see, I'm sorry, I'm just reading the Wikipedia page here for Bishop Cheers. Williamson, and apparently the Holy See lifted the excommunication in 2009. And I did recall that Pope Benny had brought them back into the fold back then.
Yeah.
There's four of them.
Pope Benedict's efforts to bring about a reconciliation with the traditionalist group included lifting the excommunications imposed on Bishop Fellay and the other SSPX bishops. But the reason they were given in the first place isn't for all of the dreadful things that they're advocating and that they have claimed, but because they didn't have the proper permission. Didn't have the right forms.
They had the
I
wrong
didn't
piece
say.
Of paper.
Wow.
Oh, dear.
And yeah, it looks like they're being welcomed back into the fold. Isn't that lovely?
Oh, it's beautiful. It gives me a warm, gooey feeling inside.
Oh, and also Catholics in America are being urged to resist unjust laws and join in a Fortnight for Freedom, it's being called, which is basically a freedom to tell others what they can and can't do. It's the liberty to be as bigoted as they wish.
Well,
how lovely.
I've got one that's going to annoy both of you.
Great.
Just the headline alone is going to upset you. Anders Breivik trained for shooting attacks by playing Call of Duty.
Yeah.
So there you go. I don't know what the idea behind this story is and why it requires an entire article in The Guardian, may I add.
You see, now I find this whole thing...
This is Baroness Greenfield now.
So incredible.
Of course it is.
That this guy is still getting a platform to spout his hate on. I mean, you know, the whole thing he wanted is publicity. And the idiots are just giving it to him all the time. Who cares if he played Call of Duty? Who cares if he took a year out to play World of Warcraft? Which apparently he also did as well.
Oh, did he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he took a sabbatical to play World of Warcraft for a year. The amount of media coverage this thing is getting is exactly what he wanted. And they're just playing into his hands all the time.
But when you say, you know, this guy's getting loads of publicity, I don't actually think his publicity is actually winning anybody over, is it?
No, but it's giving him a platform to stand on and preach his hate for.
He wants to be notorious.
At the end of the day, we're not going to give, for example, Abu Qatada the opportunity to stand up and preach his hate in court, which is exactly what's happened to this guy. And around the world, right-wing nutters are lapping it up because they're getting it broadcast into their homes what this scumbag is saying and taking, you know, able to hold him up as some kind of martyr.
This episode of Think Rant brought to you by the numbers 12 and the word scumbag.
Well, I'm trying to, you know, tone down my use of another word because I don't want to go to prison for it.
Oh, are you alluding to another news story this week, Steve?
I am.
Which is, did you hear about this, Trev?
I haven't heard about this. Are they taking swear words away from us?
Well,
a particular swear word.
Holy cuntbags, it's... surely not.
Oh. I thought we were going to keep a clean sheet this week.
Oh, you're the one that brought up car fucking. Come on, you can't ask for a clean sheet.
There's a lot of oil everywhere. Every time
I don't have the story in front of me because I wasn't.
Oil and spat.
The story got a little more complicated. But it was meant to be that a guy. A lot of sources were claiming a guy went to prison, or they were looking for a custodial sentence for a guy because he called a counsellor. That word.
See you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday. I can't say it again. We've used our allotment. Well done.
I'm so proud.
But it transpired that he also posted
people to post crap through the guy's letterbox and stuff like that. He was inciting people to do things.
So this is the problem: is he posted a picture of a house? He didn't say whose house it was or where the house was. He just posted a picture of the house, and then the second tweet said, "You may want to go and post poo or shit, whatever."
Well, in that case, it's all about context, isn't it? Just like if somebody is using something that sounds like hateful speech, but there's no impetus to do anything, there's no rabble-rousing, it's actually done to show the stupidity of the point of view, then nobody should find that offensive. But if somebody is actually inciting violence or hatred, then that's not a freedom of speech issue.
Right, but this is the
thing. Over the
line. This was the interesting part of it, was that what happened was the police arrested him for harassment. So he was brought in under that charge, but they suddenly realised they didn't have enough evidence, or what evidence they had wasn't strong enough to actually prosecute. So instead, they done him under Section 127 of the Communications Act.
Yay, everyone's favourite Communications Act.
The lovely, slippery Communications Act, which seems to just capture everything that, you know, people don't like. So you've got...
Hey, was that dissent there? That was said by John Stabler.
Maybe that's how they struck Eric Rabbitada, is get him under the Communications Act.
Yeah, there'd be no problem getting
no problem.
I think you get a death penalty for the S-127 now.
Very possibly, yeah.
But yeah, so now we've had, what's his name, Mr. Chambers, the original Twitter joke trial. He was done under it. That guy who said that the dead teenager was a bit of a slut, he was done under that.
Yeah.
And now this one. And there just seems to be a lot of it going on, even though it's a very loose law, which isn't very specific and appeals to the word offence. So where offence is concerned, which is surely the worst worded law ever. So I'm not saying that the guy, you know, is smelling of roses, you know, but
it's just bad legislation on the statute
books. Just, yeah, bad use of laws again. And obviously, aside from that, he has been a thorn in the council side because he's been actually showing the people of, I'm trying to think where it is now, Berwick or somewhere, I don't know, that how much money the councillors are earning and how there's a bit of a gravy train happening down there. He's been actually quite... He took Eric Pickles... Remember the advice Eric Pickles put out there? You need to hold your councils to account?
Yes.
Yeah, he was only following that. Okay, maybe went a bit over the top. But yeah, so just bad. I just don't like bad legislation. Still waiting for the Twitter joke trial to finish so David Alan Green can write a book about it. Because that's one book I would actually love to read. So there you go. So, nice
kind of probably preaching to the converted here, because anybody that has the capacity to be offended is not listening to this podcast anymore.
He does have a point there. So we need to try harder, obviously.
Okay, well, I've got a story that might offend people.
Oh, great.
It's great. It was in the Daily Mail. Okay. Yay. I found it online. I didn't buy the paper. Okay, the headline is, distraught boyfriend led screaming from tower block after teenage girlfriend's 17-story death plunge during police raid. Now, that sounds horrible, okay, but I read the rest of the story to try and find some more facts. A teenager plunged to her death from the bedroom window of a 17th-floor tower block yesterday, moments after police arrived to arrest her. That's it. That's where the facts end. And the rampant speculation begins. Neighbours told of some various guff. Scotland Yard said officers were not in the room when the girl fell. Scotland Yard said they were still waiting for her to be formally identified. One neighbour who did not wish to be named said a bunch of other crap. Another neighbour said some other shit. At the back of the tower block, there are one-bedroom flats, and the windows at the back, where she must have fallen, are a bit dodgy. They come up to about chest height, so she must have climbed, but they open right out so it would be easy to fall or to jump. Another witness to the incident said a bunch of other crap. It is not yet known if she leapt to ground in an attempt to get away from officers, but the police have said she was pronounced dead at the scene. Now, what the fuck is that sentence? What does the second half of that sentence have to do with the first half of the sentence? It's not yet known if she leapt in an attempt to get away. Not yet known. That's it. As though we're going to know this. Surely we're going to know this. But no, the end of the sentence is, the police have said she's dead. What the hell? They're stretching. It's just a particularly hateful bit of piss-poor muckraking of a dreadful event. Congratulations, Daily Mail. You've actually managed to disappoint me.
Really?
Never thought it would happen. Yes.
Seriously?
I expected better. I don't know what I was
thinking. Oh, Trev, come on. It's the Daily Mail.
It was just so appalling. I just kept thinking, there'll be a fact. Any second now, there'll be a fact. Council caretaker, some bloke, 42, said he knew the victim and the man who was arrested. Slow hand clap there for that particular fact.
Slow news day, obviously. Well, it's coming towards the end.
Talking of slow news day, this made me chuckle. Talk amongst yourselves for a while, because it's going to take me a little while to find it, so I do apologise. But
So hang on. Well, while he's looking at this story, me and Trev can start bigging up our upcoming. I can't remember what date it is. It's in July, isn't it? The Cardiff Science / Comedy Festival.
Oh yeah, the Skeptics in the Pub is going to be. I think it's the second week, so maybe the second Monday.
Okay. This is just a draft date for now. So that will be Monday the 9th of July. As I said, this is just a draft date, but look out for confirmation. And you get to see Trev making a fool of himself.
Yeah, but you'll be making a fool of yourself as well. So
Yeah, and I will be as well. But
Dina will be back doing some other equally ridiculous stuff.
So if anyone came to it last year, you'll remember it was quite awesome, to be fair. A good time was had by all. I need to go and book off the day after for a hangover day. it's going to be great fun. So more details to come. Steve.
Okay, so this new story, it grabbed me, to be honest with you. It's a little old now. It's a couple of weeks. Yeah,
I mean, it literally grabbed
it. It pulled me in. It was that powerful a story.
Okay.
Woman finds hat in tree. A hat has been found up a tree in Bilton. This woolen head garment, which is red and has a bobble, was discovered on Tuesday by Bilton Lane resident Sharon Bromance, 43. I could hardly believe my eyes when I saw it up there, she said. I got it down with a stick and put it on a fence post. The owner now has until April the 10th to reclaim the hat, after which it will be destroyed.
What reputable news publication?
Some local paper.
That was indeed a slow news day.
I got to tell you guys about when David Cameron went to Burma and spoke to the latest evil people in charge there.
Yes.
Although they are less evil than many of the recent ones. Where is it? Najib, the Malaysian Prime Minister, urged his counterpart in Burma to relax sanctions. He said, we need to support a man like this president so he will be supported by the community, because there will be elements who want to take a much more conservative approach. Which I thought was wonderful. Calling basically the evil bastards who've been doing all the dreadful stuff in Burma and calling them the political party of the guy who's visiting. It was wonderful.
Very clever.
A man who's proposing to throw away even more human rights from his own people than even New Labour did, pontificating about freedom, is pretty nasty. But for an ally in the new democratic wave in the East, which I don't know what they should call that, the Singapore Spring, Eastern Promise, governmental consensual chicken oriental, maybe? Have I gone too far? But yeah, to describe the enemies of freedom, liberty and democracy as conservatives is just fucking priceless. I love it. Oh, and the missus made me chuckle the other day. I've given you one brilliant comedy nugget from my son. But I said, while we were watching the news, Christ, Aung San Suu Kyi is 66 years old. She scrubs up nice for an old bird or something similar. And she said, bitch has been under house arrest for 20 years. She's had nothing to do but take long baths and rub in face cream. What shall I do today? Leave the house or moisturise? You know what I think? I'll moisturise.
Oh, brilliant. Fair enough.
Just very quickly to mention as well, that obviously, you know, interesting news last week in that Mitt Romney, true to his campaign, has pulled out of the presidential nomination campaign. Apparently he's taken some time out, pulled out to spend some more time in the 18th century. Good news there, I think, for America that they've dodged that bullet.
Yeah, but there's still so many more bullets to dodge, really, isn't there?
Yeah, but there's one less, isn't there? So, you know.
So we're running out of time, I'm afraid. And I didn't even get to talk about Lord Carey again. He seems to be featuring a lot lately, doesn't he? And we didn't even get time to ask Steve about, is he going to miss Rowan Williams?
No. Yeah.
See, we talked about it last week, Steve. You missed it.
I missed it. I must listen back.
Thanks.
And there was a weird story about a Swedish minister who denied claims of racism over a black woman cake stunt. Did you see that one? I thought,
yes.
I wanted to bring it up, but it kind of offends me as well.
Sorry, I didn't understand the story. I saw the picture quickly somewhere.
Did you not see the picture of the cake?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
Basically, what they're saying is because they're talking about the cake was an artist's response to the stories of female circumcision and genitalia mutilation, which is prevalent in certain African cultures.
Sure.
And so basically, they had this minister in, was it Sweden? Was it Trev?
Yeah.
Who I think was like the equalities minister or something, cutting into this cake, cutting a big slice out of it, and people were offended by the cake, which I can kind of understand, because having seen a picture of the cake and the head attached to it,
it looks like a black and white minstrel.
Exactly, Trev. That was my thought. There. It looks like, oh my god. Initially, I saw the angle of the cake just from the point of the body. I hadn't seen the head of it. And I saw the head of it, I thought, now I can understand why people were offended.
Yeah.
Well,
don't get me wrong, I love the cake. But,
let's not blame the cake.
Would you cut the cake then?
Yeah, I would have, but I'm not a politician, am I? So I guess the point is it was a badly judged political moment because the representation of the black person through the cake was very, very, as Trev said, black and white minstrel.
Yeah, I think the correct thing is to step away from the cake.
Indeed.
I'd have probably made some gaff, is she shaved, is it tidy down there or something?
And let's end the podcast before things get dreadful.
Yeah, exactly.
See, this is why I didn't bring it up when we had loads of time.
Yeah, I haven't got enough time to hang myself.
Okay.
Right, fine. Okay, well, another good week. It's nice to have you guys back. And,
good to be back.
And cheers. Hopefully we'll be able to continue it next week. So thanks very much for listening, people. We'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.